Kevin, you being this is a good episode because you had a lot of opinions and knowledge about the primary book to it. So I think that made for a good episode.
It means a lot to me, man.
Me too.
It means a lot to me. I never was irony pilled by the 90s. Yeah. Right. I'm not as much as our friend wanted to make us Gen X.
Yeah.
I was never Gen X.
Yeah.
I'm, you know.
And Dune is a thing that can prevent you from becoming irony pilled, I think. Yeah. And now that you say it, I hadn't thought of it. But yeah, if you kind of wield that and you take it serious, what the book's trying to say, it can prevent you from falling into nihilism and meaninglessness, I think, and cheap cynicism and all of that. So
yeah, are you able to feel?
Right, right.
And Dune is the thing that, you know, told me you can feel.
Yeah. By the way, we're doing the After Dark.
After Dark.
For patrons, do you call them patrons? I guess you do, right?
Patrons.
Yeah, patrons. Yeah. Or Patreon patrons. Yeah. Thank you so much for supporting us. We're gonna talk about a few other things here. I hope people like that episode. It was fascinating for me to dig into the life of Frank Herbert. Revitalized.
It was exactly what I expected.
Yeah. I think so. I think you see this with a lot of our people, with a lot of the people we cover. It's like it somehow makes perfect sense that they were the way they were to make the things that they made.
It's surreal to listen to you rail about Herbert and go, oh yeah, the Pacific Northwest. It makes perfect sense.
Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Mm-hmm. And yeah, what a figure. And one thing we said in that show, and maybe this podcast can be an aid in changing this slightly, is Dune is so big that Frank Herbert somehow got lost in the conversation about it. It's more than most things. It somehow exists independent. Nobody really talks about Frank Herbert, and yet everybody talks about Dune. It's very interesting.
Dune is extremely important. You can't overstate how important it is. I mean, sound like a nerd,
it's integral to all of those social changes that occurred in the 60s, It's in the first issue of the Whole Earth Catalog. And the Whole Earth Catalog was hugely influential on all of these things that came out.
Yeah, these people were not playing around.
Yeah, like
they defined the future. The present that you inhabit, they created.
And all those people read Dune.
They all read Dune.
Every smart college kid in America
everybody at Stanford read Dune. Dune.
Right.
All the professors read Dune. Yep, everyone read Dune.
Right, right. And so to refresh that memory and then to talk about the man who actually created it, I think... I felt like we did something.
We're doing the work.
We did some actual.
It's important.
Yeah.
And all the context of the time, trying to sort of like refresh the 20s and the 30s, we're doing the work here. It's good.
Yeah.
I think I had an insight and then it escaped me, but it's. They invented the world that we inhabit.
Yeah,
right. And they are not that far from like the clairvoyant and the table knocking and the craziness and the Crowley and all that.
Yeah, and that's the thing is you can see that kind of connection here. You got the Rhine card sometime in the 1930s and then it's all gestating and then whoop, Dune comes out at some point. And the line's a little blurry, but it's a line and it's there.
It's super close. Yeah. That's all. That's all.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. And I enjoy that. I enjoy how crazy America is. And how psychedelic fucked up interesting this country is.
And every once in a while we produce something great like Dune.
Yeah.
It's not the only example, but
no. But if there's nothing, I mean, the insight that I had earlier, you know, in the episode, it's like, this is like, I guarantee that the Beatles read Dune.
Oh yeah.
They read Dune.
For sure. Is Frank Herbert on the cover of Lonely Heart Club
Sergeant Pepper? I don't know that he is.
But, you know, but he could have been. It would have made perfect sense. Yeah. So a couple of things we promised we'd talk a little bit more about the drug connection. So we'll some of this isn't as organized as the previous show here, but I'm going to tell you. So again, I thought it was so charming how Brian was like, yeah, dad, old dad did drugs two times in his life. And, you know, okay.
Stop. the whole thing where these guys like, where they talk about like doing drugs once or twice as a laugh. Yeah. That makes me so crazy. It's like you either you did drugs or you didn't do drugs.
I don't believe you. Right. So let me give you a report from, I don't know if you're familiar with this guy, Paul Stamets, if that name rings a bell for you.
Yeah. Paul.
He's like the only famous mycologist in the world.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, no, my friend Deborah Yarchin is a playwright, and
So she's been, he's been. Paul Stamets has been on the Joe Rogan Experience.
Yeah, he's the mycologist.
Yeah, and he did a great TED talk about how mushrooms can save the world. Not psychedelic mushrooms, but like mushrooms being used for industrial cleanup things like this, right? And he makes some really good points. He has a company that you can buy, you know, you can buy mushrooms, you can buy lion's mane from and take as a supplement and all these things. He's deep in mushroom world, but he's also deep in psychedelic mushroom world, which he never really publicized until the last few years, until it became a little bit more okay to do that. Now in the early 1980s, Paul Stamets, very young man at the time, went out and met Frank Herbert at Xanadu in Washington. And I'm going to give you just Paul Stamets's words. Frank Herbert, the well-known author of the Dune books, told me his technique of using spores. When I met him in the early 1980s, Frank enjoyed collecting mushrooms on his property near Port Townsend, Washington. An avid mushroom collector, and this is just generally mushrooms, culinary mushrooms, everything. An avid mushroom collector, he felt that throwing his less than perfect wild chanterelles into the garbage or compost didn't make sense. Instead, he would put a few weathered chanterelles in a 5-gallon bucket of water, add some salt, and then after one or two collabs, pour this spore mass slurry on the ground at the base of newly planted firs. When he told me the chanterelles were glowing from trees not even 10 years old, I couldn't believe it. No one had previously reported chanterelles arising near such young trees, nor had anyone reported them growing as a result of using this method. Of course, it did work for Frank, who was simply following nature's lead. Okay, so that's one point, right? Frank was experimenting in how to grow mushrooms of any kind, chanterelles, you know, anything. He's figuring out how to do this, and he's inventing a technique for doing it. And this is, I should note for people who don't know the history of how mushrooms developed, prior to Terence McKenna and his brother writing the Mushroom Grower's Guide in 1976, almost any magic mushroom that you got your hands on had been picked in the wild by somebody, right? Typically, the way you got them, you either bought them from somebody who went out into the woods and found them, or you went out into the woods and found them, right? In 1976, Terence McKenna and his brother had figured out how to basically grow them in your closet, and they wrote a book about it under a pseudonym. And then this changed the game for mushrooms, right? Because now people figured out how they could actually do it. And then you started being able to buy mushroom spores in the mail, which, by the way, you can still do.
And wouldn't recommend it.
Yeah. It's totally legal.
Well,
you know, it's totally, it's 100% legal unless you live in California for some reason. So Frank had figured out a way to do what they suggest in the Mushroom Grower's Guide, but before they published it, he figured it out, you know, probably mostly on his own. Now, here's the other thing.
He's the pragmatist.
He is. He's the tinkerer. He's going to figure out how to make it work. Yeah,
exactly.
So continuing with the Paul Stamets bit, Frank's discovery has now been confirmed in the mushroom industry. It is now known that it's possible to grow many mushrooms using spore slurries from elder mushrooms. many variables come into play, but in a sense, this method is just a variation of what happens when it rains. Water dilutes spores from mushrooms and carries them to new environments. Our responsibility is to make that path easier, such is the way of nature. Now, we haven't talked about psychedelic mushrooms yet, but we're going to, because the next thing that Frank tells Paul is this.
Let's go.
Frank went on to tell me that much of the premise of Dune, the magic spice, spores, this that allowed the bending of space, tripping, the giant worms, maggots digesting mushrooms, the eyes of the Fremen, the cerulean blue of psilocybin mushrooms, the mysticism of the female spiritual warriors, the Ben Gesserits, was influenced by the tales of Maria Sabina and the sacred mushrooms cults of Mexico. All of this came from the perception of the fungal life cycle and his imagination stimulated through the experiences with the use of magic mushrooms. Right. So no matter what Brian says, Paul Stamets is here telling us that basically Frank was living in a little mushroom paradise that he had constructed out in Washington State and taking the lessons that he learned from these experiences to heart and to write these books. Now, I suspect the other thing is we got to think about places we lived. In the 70s and the 80s, Frank is living out in Washington State. But in the 60s, he's living in San Francisco and hanging out with Alan Watts and science fiction writers. If you're telling me these people weren't dropping acid every once in a while, they absolutely were tripping.
They were tripping.
Right? So Frank was right there. Yeah. Also, at that time, in the 60s, the mid-60s, basically the only place on the planet that you could get DMT was San Francisco. You couldn't get DMT in Detroit or Minnesota.
There were
50 people in the country that knew how to do DMT, right?
Right. Yeah.
So
right.
I'm fairly convinced that he also imbibed in DMT at some point. And for people who haven't done DMT, mushrooms make a lot of sense for a lot of the things in Dune. DMT makes even more sense as spice to me than mushrooms.
Yeah.
It's a time warping, overwhelming experience that, you know, that it allows you to see through time, for crying out loud. maybe not in direct ways where you can like bet on sports and win, but in more sort of a psychedelic sense in which it breaks down your conceptions of time for sure. So that's all there. It's all just on the other side of the pages for sure. And Paul Stamets I searched for a long time to find evidence of one person saying that Frank Herbert had done DMT. I'm pretty convinced that he had done it just based on sort of circumstantial evidence. I have another drug story about Frank Herbert as well. And this you can't find written anywhere because it's been told to me secondhand and may not even be true. However, I have a friend who has a friend who teaches folklore and mythology or something like that. An older guy teaches at a state school here in Michigan. This guy tells a story. He knew a guy who knew Jim Henson, right? And he's worked in I think he may have contributed some stuff to the Dark Crystal. Like he's worked in this professor's worked in this like puppetry world a little bit.
Oh.
So it's like rumored, handed down. Supposedly, at one point in the early 80s, Jim Henson and Frank Herbert tripped mushrooms together.
Which, yeah, that's fine.
That just sounds beautiful.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
Like two real heads out of
heads.
The edge of, you know, and you can, you know, make fun of any Jim Henson production, but the Muppets, that whole thing is unbelievably trippy. Innovative and crazy.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
creative,
yeah, yeah, yeah,
and brilliant, yeah, yeah. Right. Yeah, it's yeah. so much. So,
yeah. Yeah.
So anyway, that's kind of all I guess I had to say.
Is that your punchline?
That's kind of it.
That's good. Stuff. They were all on drugs. I mean, they were all on fucking drugs.
Yeah.
If you don't understand that, like your entire culture, every single last goddamn good thing that like we're about.
Yeah.
Is they were all fucking stoned, man.
Yeah. And this was an interesting thing. I remember, I don't know how fine a point we want to put on this, but I remember coming into contact with a bunch of artists at one phase of my life where all of us were kind of artists and being shocked that almost nobody had like psychedelic experience.
They're lying. They're lying.
Maybe that's what it is.
No, I don't know. Maybe. Yeah.
Maybe. I don't know.
Maybe.
I had thought like, I thought when I met all these people, I was like, oh yeah, we're all going to be people who had like,
tripped. Tripped. I don't know. Yeah. I think a lot of people are like, a little
cagey about talking about it.
They're cagey about talking about it.
Yeah. That's fair. Yeah. And I guess I am a little bit too, but not entirely, you know?
Yeah.
There's a little bit of a, like, we got to come out of the closet kind of thing too.
I think
a little bit, right?
I think, it's a class thing. Like a lot of times, like they're sort of like hiding, you know, they're in their hidey hole, you know.
Bro, that's true. Yeah. So let's do one other thing. Let's do a couple of crappy Dune takes.
Oh, here's the thing. I am 100% correct about Dune.
I'd say you're. I don't disagree with it.
I'm right about Dune.
That doesn't mean I'm right, though.
No, I'm 100% correct about
Dune. Oh, shoot, my browser just froze up here.
So
give me a second.
No, it's fine. It's, you know, the thing about Dune is that I'm right about Dune.
it says that actually, if you sit through the credits right at the end, it says
Kevin Kautzman is right about Dune. You know, it's I don't know, man.
Here's a good one. I'm not even gonna say who these people are from because I'm not about starting like battles with people.
It's just hilarious.
Here's one on Twitter. I have taken a few days to process hashtag Dune.
Stop.
And now
no, stop. That's awesome. That's awesome. That rocks. Sorry. Go on.
And now I am ready to capital S share, capital S some, capital T thoughts. Ready awesome. To share some thoughts.
He's ready.
Too long, didn't read. I thought it was a gorgeously made, deeply pleasurable film based on an unforgivably sexist, racist, fatphobic, and all caps, silly source text.
Oh, no.
The good. Holy shit, the sound design, the rich density of the sonic
landscape, the sound
design. Blah, 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 blah.
The sound is amazing.
Oh, yeah.
The sound is amazing. Yeah.
With that out of the way.
Honestly, stop. Yeah. That was something I was going to comment in the episode.
Oh, the sound design is
it's freaking
brilliant. Yeah.
I literally want to go. I'm going to go downstairs after this and put it on and just like enjoy the soundscape.
Yeah, I'm going to watch. I'm going to probably watch it. I got to get an HBO Max account.
It's so good.
So she says some good things about the film, right? With that out of the way, the story itself felt like the worst kind of old white guy science fiction, the kind that turned me off the genre for years before I found out that other ways of telling stories about the future are possible. This is a world how many thousands of years to the future, and in it, women are still treated as property. The Bene Gesserit who fucking rule the universe and kept in their place via rape threats.
What?
Fat and disabled people, because Harkonnen is fat, okay?
He's
fat.
Are still treated as monsters
whose bodies are signs of their immorality. Okay, fine. He's a disgusting human being. He also happens to be fat.
I don't know what you want me to do about it. I'm very alarmed.
The only named Black and Asian characters who appear on screen die violently, either at the hands of or in service to the young straight white male protagonist.
Is he white? Yeah, I don't know.
Yes.
Confused.
Yeah.
What are you talking? This is a LARP. This is not real.
Well, I think she's being sincere. She's just ridiculous.
She's like psychotic.
The problem isn't that this is how Herbert wrote. This is the legacy of science fiction that my favorite contemporary writers are writing specifically against. The problem is that in a world of much, much better stories, this is the one that got adapted again. It's all about, is it good because it fits the right identitarian politics stuff, right? So how you're supposed to make an evil Baron Harkonnen. You know, one thing that they did leave out in the new Dune that was, it does happen in the books and in the Lynch Dune, is Baron Harkonnen gets his rocks off by murdering boys in the middle of coitus. That's not
in the movie. They left that out,
they
huh?
They did leave it out. Yeah, and I told Jody afterward, I was like, Baron Harkonnen is actually way worse than that.
Yeah. We left that out of the new Dune movie.
Yeah. We didn't need to see Jessica get threatened with rape. We didn't need a close-up of a fat person eating disgustingly to prove that they're evil. We didn't need to watch Paul murder a black man to establish his place. Those were all choices, and they sucked.
They're joking, right?
No.
Oh, my God.
This is a real twit.
Oh.
It's just like you get so, like, even if you have a point in there, and maybe you do here and there, like, how are you so lost in...
I don't know.
Right? Okay. One more.
Hang on.
Let me give you another one that I found. We're not gonna, like, again, we're not saying who these people are or anything. I'm not trying to start Twitter beef. This is why we're doing it on the Patreon.
No, that's brutal. Like, yeah. But let me speak to these things.
Yeah.
Those things are, if you understand, like, the history of the West, like, they're describing the way that things were. Like, it's you have to show these things in order to...
Right. You're recapitulating, like, old patterns. And, like...
Yeah.
Are we really saying, because Baron Harkonnen is a fat guy, are we really saying that fat people are evil?
No. Right, no.
That's not the point of it, right?
No, it's
repulsive on many levels, right?
It's gluttony.
Yeah.
It's, we used to have...
We're trying to show his
deadly sins. Yeah.
They're trying to show what his soul is.
Right.
On the outside. Right,
but they don't believe in these things.
Right, exactly. You know? So,
So
it's not to say that a person who is overweight, maybe even a person who has trouble eating too much, it's not to say anything negative about them. We're trying to show you in one image what a specific kind of corrupted individual looks like symbolically. Right.
Correct.
The easiest way to do that is to show them as slovenly, gluttonous. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
We're trying to cut to the quick and represent something, in a pre-literate mode.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Right. And so they say, "Oh, he's fat phobic." Well, then how are you supposed to show him?
Right. Right.
Like, if he'd have been a person, like, it's ridiculous.
No. They're retards.
Yeah. So we're gonna go one more. Just reread a synopsis / explainer of Dune. So just reread a synopsis / explainer, not the book, of Dune. And while it's entirely right that we have a conversation about the colonialist thinking in the film, I think we should also acknowledge that the gender politics are almost comically bananas. What's so bananas about the gender politics?
Of Dune?
Yeah.
No. It's the way we were for thousands of years.
It's not saying right or wrong. It's not anything. And plus, the women, it's practically a matriarchal society.
Yeah.
In a way. Yeah. I mean, it's more of
These people are Protestants, Brad.
Right, right. Yeah.
So it's you. Yeah. You'll never, you're never going to understand how Protestant they are.
Here's her follow-up to it. It's basically, quote, "Women are cold psychopaths who secretly dominate men using sex and mind control." That's the message of the film.
Hmm.
It's cold psychopaths who use... Like, then what about Lady Jessica? Who's, in my opinion, she might be my favorite character in the book, actually, in a way. Lady Jessica. I just like that she went against the Bene Gesserit, but she still is of them. Like, it's not cut and dry, right? Like, she's in a battle regarding her love for her husband and wanting to give him an heir and the tradition and legacy of the Bene Gesserit. And she's trying to be a good mother and help her son survive this thing, but she knows she has to back off and let him get his power. Right? She's a complicated figure. So to say, like, oh, women are just cold psychopaths. Like, that's not... No, what part of the movie is that? Like, So Twitter is full of these endless, gender studies term paper abstracts that are just like,
fine.
Like, not only not really understanding what the book is doing, but like not even fully understanding.
They don't even know. They truly do not understand the English language.
Right. Right. Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
And you think about, like, okay, if you would have tried to make turn Dune into something that serviced these kind of people and these kinds of concerns, it would just be bad on the other side. right? Like, what do? You make like you make Lady Jessica.
I see what you're saying. Yeah.
Plato.
Right. Yeah, that's so funny. Baron, nobody would want to watch that movie.
Like,
yeah.
What do you? It wouldn't work. And then you would just be saying like some weird perversion of what they think it's saying now. It would just be like what do you? Yeah, I don't know. It's very strange. But like if they'd shown Baron Harkonnen, like they do in Lynch's Dune, murdering a hapless boy while he's having sex with him, well, is that gay representation?
Right.
I don't know. Like,
holy fuck.
You can't keep up with this mill.
Right. Of yeah. Life. There's no. Yeah. Nobody. It's just porn.
Right.
It just becomes porn.
Right. And all the rationalizations are so post hoc. They're going on a feeling and then they're trying to put in smart sounding words around it. So because of that, you can't ever counter it because they're just going to have a feeling about whatever you say next. So it's like, it's just funny to read these.
No, it is.
Man, these are the most unsophisticated takes on anything I've ever seen.
Fucking retards. I mean, it's just.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, I don't know. I mean, that's kind of all I got to cover. I mean, I just wanted to put that
shouldn't
out there.
I shouldn't put this out. You know, no, but
it's in Patreon. You gotta pay. You gotta.
Hey,
pay
for you know, goodies. If you want to pay for my hot takes, you know, you gotta pay for it. No, but you know, I was looking forward to this like for all week. I was really excited, and you know, yeah,
yeah,
hell yeah,
did,
dude.
I think we did the thing, man.
Dude, so. I think you know, it's. We're not, you know, you're not, you know, Dune is a big deal.
And it is.
Like,
it
really is. It's a big deal.
And they did a good, and I'm honestly, I'm so happy that they did a good job. Like,
they did a good job.
If there can be criticisms and all that, but like, they did, it's good enough, I think. Yeah. It's a great film, and that means it's good enough. So
it's, yeah. Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
All right, my dude. All right.
Be good.
Later.
All right, mate.